Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Yo, yo, check this out. This is your girl, Cola Boat, and I'm chilling with my boys right here on Off the Cuff Radio. We off the cuff right now. You dig?
What's up? It's your boy Lil Yaka, UNLV, ragging up from the river, cooling with my homies and my family at Off the Cuff Radio. Y'all be sure to tune in on Fridays and get the latest scoop and find out what's happening. You hoit me?
Tiffany Levine.
And it's Queen Queasy, your girl's favorite bartender.
And we're from?
Sex on the Rocks podcast.
All right, you're now tuning in to Off the Cuff Radio.
Yeah, because they keep representing that world hip-hop. Yo, much love.
All right. Y'all, this is Princess Daisy giving a shout-out to King Eric and Off the Cuff Radio. Keep doing your thing, puppy.
Hey y'all, this is Stacia Lachey giving a shout out to King Eric and Off the Cuff Radio.
What's shaking, y'all? This is the Grand, one half of Lost Cause and one third of that Drive Time thing. Sending my love to the homies over at Off the Cuff Radio. Tune in every Friday night for some real deal hip-hop conversation. These dudes are the connoisseurs of this thing. You already know what it is. BX Stand Up, Hud City, was shaking. Peace.
Yo, this is Joe Fresh the Dime, and y'all tuned in to the most raw, uncut show on radio. The Guillotine Team, Off the Cuff, and yo, Eric Sandman, off of these clown heads.
Now a lot of these misses is gonna try to convince you that we misogynistic. Truth is, most of these misses is just misguided.
First you're dealing with a true West Side Californian. Rest in peace, DMX, here we go again. If your body fake, you don't get a husband and a diamond. Just dick in the cubic zirconian. This how LA crack. I gotta pay you to date you, that's where the game at. You know what, I ain't tripping, I got some cake stacked. I was trying to get to know you, but if you a prostitute, bitch, say that. I see you get naked for a grand live visor to take you to dinner, your only fan's $9. Trying to clown a nigga that couldn't afford to book your flight. You and yourself don't even look alike. Yes, you a hoe, you belong to the street. That's why you subbing who you fucking with Justin LaVoy tweet. Yes, yes, you a hoe, you belong to the street. That's why you subbing who you fucking with Justin LaVoy tweet.
They got some games, I can take a piece. A cough leaves your mouth at 60 miles per hour. Bitch, get the fuck away from me. And what the fuck I look like calling a bitch boo? An average, ordinary motherfucker like you.
I can't you.
She pulled up on me and roller skates in it. Sugar free to Peter. Bitch, exercise makes you look better naked, and so does tequila.
Look at the bitch stopping traffic like a red light.
This is what she do and what she does, nigga. Air neck, and this is stupid. I don't care about your past hoe, I care about your motherfucking future. What? Church, nigga. Sugar free to pee. I'll pimp on the bitch till he come up. Yeah, pimp on glasses, she belong to the street. Whip rock, drop that nigga freak.
That bitch belongs, that bitch belongs. To the street.
That bitch
like
sell that thing, don't come fucking with me though.
That bitch belongs, that bitch belongs. To the street.
Yeah, bitch, call yourself, come fucking with me, you gon' love that thing.
This is one of them occasions where the homie not doing it right. I see you found you a hoe that you like, but you can't make a hoe a housewife. And when it all boils down, you gon' learn in the end. Keeping that bitch, I had your ass locked in the pen. Cause some judge that handed you lot. Bro, you can't make a hoe a housewife. And I can tell you little niggas from the spirit. Don't do it, bro, point blank period. I had one, tried to get serious. Thought I was a little hoe, hands at the pier shit. Future looking clear shit, talking matrimony. Had to thank God when I ran into the homies. Learned the whole hood hit bitch. Shit, out my foe, all you gotta get, so split.
Oh shit, they didn't say the max to last. I'd rather die before I give a punk bitch a pass. Yeah, I'm hard on them, Joe, that's what hoes need. Sleeping on this Mac and posting fake-ass woke men. Yeah, fuck your mama, he just text the bitch. Yeah, I said it, why you asking when I text the bitch? Oh, you ready? You ain't ready for the deuce. Oh, you scared of the truth, and you been fucking with your face, now I'm scared. scared of you. Oh, you thought cutting in yourself was gonna amp something? I just spent 80 on the Chevy trying to wax something. Bitch told me she ain't worried about none of that. Homie got 40 on something trying to run. Man, I know you ain't acting like you hoes worth a little more. I just see you do a whole lot for a little blow. Try to keep it gangster, but you bitches be lonely in the streets. And over here, GSP, yeah, we clamp for kids. Hey!
That bitch belongs, to the streets. That bitch belongs to the street. Oh yeah. That bitch belongs. That bitch belongs to the street. That bitch belongs. That bitch belongs to the street. Oh yeah.
Yeah, we are now at episode 511 of Off the Cuff Radio, Friday Night Madness. I am your host, King Eric the Media Assassin, and this show is sponsored by Cocaine, Buddy Boy Entertainment, Da Vinci Clothing, Core Financial, Jesse Boutique, Fleetwood and the Cod Pickers, Screwball Radio. You can catch us there every Saturday night with me, Black Poet and Comet. I got my host, T-Max, with the facts in the building. What's good, my man?
What's going on, man? Another fantastic Friday. OTC, we are the flyest frequency up on the eye in the net, and we are doing it dope as usual. And tonight, we welcome back one of the most distinguished, one of the most realest, wisest, staged, and overall genius generals of the left, representing that wild out, what's up, Blue Division General himself. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, glasses low. What it do, man?
Man, what's happening, man? What's the deal?
What's going good, on with man. You, man? How you happy been? To have you on
been
for
a second,
part two.
With us?
Oh, man, once again, it's on.
Yeah. I see, man. So it's been a second since you've been with us, man. I mean, what you been doing all this time? You know, we got a little bit of time. Let's get it.
Studying, man. Just doing my homework. I've learned firsthand in life, the way you go forward is by going backwards. As weird as it sounds, you go forward by learning backwards. So just taking my time, you know, learning all of the stuff I need to learn, staying focused, you know what I mean, making sure I make my mark.
Definitely. Now, one thing about it, Glass, is that, you know, I'll dip in, you know, stopping in on your IG when you do your lives, when you're in the studio session, you know, with the Blue Room glow. And, I mean, y'all really be spitting some gems up in there, man. Was that part of the process in terms of you really refocusing and recentering, you know, your hustle in terms of where the music was, in terms of, you know, getting your, you know, mentality streamlined, in terms of where the next move was? Because definitely, you know, when you and the crew get there, y'all really build monuments of wisdom in it, with it.
I don't know if I planned it that way.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I just have a little bit more time than most people to study, and I just focus on studying, you know, especially with music, culture in general, and even when we're building this space, particularly, you know, we call it Outer Space. We're building this space. We built it to be a workhorse. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't. I know it got blue shit all through here, but that's not really what it was. It's much nicer rug and much nicer pillow, but it was like people was putting dirty shoes on the carpet on the rug that I got, and they wasn't really taking good care of my couch pillow, so I put the blue rag, you know. Yeah, man. They was doing some things, so I got my little nice rug cleaned up, and I was like, let me roll this up and put this to the side, and, you know, the thing about the blue bandana is durable, you know what I'm saying? And it's meant mm-hmm. to be worked. You know, you can put in work with that around there. So I set that down and took me to another workspace, and it just happened to fit, you know, what I'm about. But that wasn't the initial plans for this room. It was really to make it look like outer space, like it's more stuff supposed to be done, but it ain't about all that aesthetics, you know what I'm saying? So over the next 12 months, I'll finish it up, but it's been a workhorse right now, and the stuff that's coming out of here is amazing.
Yeah, man, it's been a minute since we last built it up and chopped it up and everything. And what I heard, the last project you dropped was Glass House, man. How are the people receiving that so far?
What's funny is that's a project from 2012, so I had to kind of get it set back in time, but it came out like it was new. And it was weird to watch people really consume it and enjoy it like it was a brand new project. You know what I'm saying? So that was dope. You know what I mean? People still hit me about certain songs, you know, but really it was more about just putting that up there for somebody that considers himself a supporter of Glasses Malone or a follower of themselves, you know what I'm saying, who mess with my music. I wanted to make sure they had a full catalog on streaming services. But when that went up, it just went up in real time. They actually making adjustments to put it back for when it came out, which was 2012. But I got a lot of love for it, man. It was dope. People loved it. They thought it was special. It made them feel right back on the West, and I know it's been a while since they felt like that.
Bringing back that West Coast vibe, Glass, because you know you have two individuals right here that have pretty much followed you for the better part of your career and have always thought you were one of the illest out there, one of the dopest. As an artist, even for something that was a little bit more, you know, going back in archives with it, how does it make you feel as an artist to know that you created something that was so timeless, that was so classic, that was so generationally great that it had no expiration date? And the people, no matter when it dropped, they copped.
I mean, I'm grateful. But we set out to make ideas that aren't dated. You know, that is something we do think about when we make music. And especially lately, like, a lot of it has been a time machine and going back in time and putting together ideas that could fit anywhere. You know what I mean? That could fit in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, 10, 20. And honestly, even with the features on that particular record, I think we got into the habit of, like, we stopped aging, you know, our heritage artists out. Like, our hip-hop heritage artists is out. So I have Trey D, Corrupt, all of the legends I grew up listening to. Like, I'm through with the belief that I need to use somebody younger versus making one great idea. And that became the most important thing to me, making, you know, music going forward. Like, let me stop allowing, you know, the public to tell me what has to happen. I'm the creator, I'm the leader in the space, so I tell them what's good. And it's been, you know, it's been paying off dividends for me. It's worked out.
To build off what T-Max was saying about us, you know, being introduced to music, I'm going to keep it buck, man. I got introduced to you, and this was a blessing in disguise. When, went back in that time where, you know, Ice Cube, he kind of, you know, called you and Crooked Eye and Bishop LaMotta, and I was thinking to myself, hold on, this got to be a raw nigga to get Cube attention. You know what I mean? So I was like, let me go ahead and do my research, and come to find out, your storytelling abilities is what captivated me as a listener. Like, when I looked at some of your catalog, like the video that you did for The Home Invasion, that was like real dope storytelling. The one you did with Mac 10.
Everybody got to go. What's crazy is, as a storyteller, most of my storytelling comes from Ice Cube. That's always hilarious to me. But there was a time, you know, when we came into the business, it wasn't really forthcoming to young West Coast artists. They wasn't really feeling what we, you know, it wasn't they wasn't feeling what we was doing. They shut the door, really, for me, in my mind. They was like, whatever happened after this don't matter no more. And obviously, when you come from the street, you know, you become the next voice of what's going on the street corners. So it was a natural progression. So even that whole situation with Cube, like, I've never said anything disrespectful to Cube in life or about Cube in life.
Right.
The things you know, didn't even like what I said was still rooted in truth. I just didn't realize it was a secret, and, you know, the business was a little bit more protective of ideas than I thought. I didn't look at it like that, and I wasn't trying to, you know, make a tough point, but it was tough. You know what I mean? That was a tough time, and somebody to be, you know, that influenced your whole style to not really be, you know, receptive of you. Not to mention, I didn't bought every record this man ever put out. Groups, whatever groups, his groups, Caution, Yo-Yo, I bought everything outside of just his. I bought Mac 10. I bought Short Chop, you know what I'm saying? So that was a tough thing I had to deal with. But, man, the one thing, I'll be honest, the streets prepare you for, you know, even the people you love the most to hate you sometimes.
That's deep. That's deep. You know, when you talk about the industry, Glasses, you know, we go back to years ago about the deal you had with Sony and about how that went, you know, so, and, you know, you had a time with that, for those that know that history, and for what you managed to make it out with in terms of how you managed to still, because most artists would have folded under that situation, and you didn't. I think that's that DNA of that Watts hustle, you know. You know, Watts ain't weak, ever, you know. So, and you managed to persevere. When you look at the games from years back, it's been about 2-3 years since we last had you on. A lot has changed, you know, in the game, you know, from society, you know, from what's been blowing up in Watts. I mean, look, J-Rock done fucked around, won a Grammy. I mean, you got artists like Ivory, you know, coming up. You know, Cam dropped a new project, you know, a while back. I mean, you all have just kept going, going, and going. What is it like to see your city still holding the fort down and still moving forward, you know, pushing out, you know, that progress?
Watts, a lot of people from this side of Watts have, you know, they always say, they spell Watts and use it as an acronym. You know, we are taught to survive. So No matter what's going on, like, I know how to survive it. So Sony, right, it didn't matter. I was going to survive it. Cash Money, I was going to survive it. Studying and learning, I was going to survive it. It didn't matter if it was, you know, Ice Cube misunderstanding what I'm saying or every legend not really helping. I was always going to survive because I was built to survive. Like, that's the thing that I will give Watts every ounce of credit for, is surviving. They will teach you survival, and they will teach you survival with your chest out and your shoulders broad, not like a cockroach, not crawling. They're going to show you how to stand up and be a man, and it's paid dividends in this business. J-Rock, you know, that's somebody I started. Me, J-Rock, and Nip all put out our first mixtapes in the same year. You know what I'm saying? So to watch J-Rock get a Grammy, to get 2 gold plaques, you know what I mean? Like, that was one of the most important things to happen for me. You know what I'm saying? Because we came up the hard way, just us. And for him to reach the pinnacle is everything. You know what I'm saying? So I'm always proud of any Watts artist. Cam could never stop. He's still entirely too good. Ivory, anybody else, you know, it's going to work out. That's the one thing that part of the city teaches you, is resilience. And shit, we just stay resilient about it all and keep learning. And eventually it's going to just, it has to fold. It will fold. The one thing, can't none of this shit deal with watch pressure. Like, it has to fold. This game could never beat me because I beat everything that was real to beat. So I'm going to beat it, period. And everybody that's right in the way, they can't. It's not, they don't have a chance. Like, I'm built to tough. I'm built for it.
Yeah, I could imagine the struggle at that time, man, because it was like, if you wasn't coming from the Snoop tree, the Dre tree, or the Q tree, it was hard for a new West Coast artist to really pop.
Shit, it's like that now until YG. You know what I'm saying? But the NWA tree is a thick tree. You know, it's a tree that we all supported and are fans of, so. But, I mean, the benefit in having legends is you absorb their knowledge, right? So
right.
that's the benefit Snoop got. He got to absorb Dre's knowledge. I'm saying he had his own natural gifts and talent, but he got the ability to absorb Dre's knowledge and so forth, whether it was Q, you know, whether it was Dre, whether it was things that came from Eazy-E, anything that came from that tree, you feel me, they got the knowledge of, you know, the elder that was in front of them. All it meant for me was I just had to go learn what the elders knew. So I could never be as wise as Dr. Dre, right, and what he taught Snoop, but what I can be as informed as Dr. Dre. You know what I'm saying? And that's my job. So, yeah, it took me, if Snoop probably did it this way, it might have took him a lot longer. But I got time, man, and at the end of the day, I'm down. Like, I got a purpose. It's for a greater thing, so it's inevitable. You feel me? So if I had to go pick up the stuff that I didn't get free from Dr. Dre or I didn't get free from no other legend, you know what I mean? Like, it's the Quick Camp and it's the Dre Camp, you know, NWA Camp and the Quick Camp. So, no, you know what I'm saying? And I could never know what Dr. Dre or DJ Quick truly knows, but I know enough right now to fuck some shit up, and that's the most important part, and I'm not going to stop learning. That's the truth.
That's the most important thing in terms of being an artist, and that's the common sense that makes dollars, you know, from having that sense. You know, pennies make pounds no matter what you pick up, and it ultimately equates to a bank vault, you know, of wisdom, as you said. thinking about that time in terms of watching California blow up in general, when you look at, you know, rest in peace Nip, how he was moving, when you look at what YG started moving, because you just mentioned him in terms of how it was really going, when you look at, you know, other artists, you know, like Mozzie really making their come up, hold your head, Moz, we know about the situation, you know, he's got to do his year for that weapons possession charge. To see the West in a sense of a renaissance, to see you all collectively flourishing in such a way, to see, you know, artists like, you know, Kamaya, you know, Kehlani, her, you know, so many. How does that feel, you know, for, you know, you being part of that, you know, movement with Cali staying active? I mean, of course, you know, Cam and Shyna, you know, Honest Alone. You know, I mean, of course, Cocaine and, you know, Big Hutch, they doing a project. I mean, it's so much. I mean, please tell us.
I won't lie. Like, I'm so focused on trying to get the West back to, you know, the renaissance that was Death Row in that time period from, you know, 1990 to 1998. I just want it to return there, so I put a ton of pressure on the producers to further their understanding of records and learn how to DJ. You know, don't settle with just knowing how to keyboard and press the keyboard. You know, learn how to DJ. You know what I mean? Learn what finishing records is all about. So I'm always proud of every artist out on the West staying active, but I definitely want to see us return back to that sense of prominence that Atlanta currently resides. So my focus, myself into the LA Giants and to Foursome, the female group we work with, that's all I preach is a return to prominence. Prominence is the only position for the West to be in. Like, everything else is, you know what I mean? Everything else is unsatisfactory in my mind. So I guess I'm just focused on that point. But I'm always proud of everybody that's making music all the time.
And you know what, though? Yeah. Another thing, too, about your music, too, is when I listen to it, it feel like as though you're not afraid of, you know, taking that artistic chance. Just like the song we just played with Kanye, Shouldn't Marry That Bitch. Now, what was the motivation behind creating that song? Like, what made you be like, yo, the starting point to make you want to write something like that?
I just feel like we're in a weird place on the West Coast where you got a lot of youngsters like that was like me. When they came into business, they're trying to move music further somewhere else. And I'm preaching to them that's hard to do because the streets haven't changed. Like, we're still at the exact same place culturally. I mean, hip-hop is rooted in culture. It's not just sounds and talking. It's really culture. how the streets talk, the soil itself. And I just was trying to show some people specifically, like, man, you got to triple down on the teachings of all our great legends and wisdom. You got to triple down on it. So the concept itself is just, you can't turn a hoe into a housewife. You know, it's straight out of the book of Dr. Dre. There was a Bible that's out of the book of Dr. Dre, the gospel of Dr. Dre. So tripling down on that thought, you know what I'm saying, and making something really, just like I said about 5 minutes ago, talking about the legend, Sugar Free, somebody who I've been a fan of and who's always been great, gracious to me in the business and answer any questions from, you know, to fill my head with knowledge, making a record with him. And then, you know, the L.A. Giants being able to fit in that space and understanding why these things are true. So making a record and having Jelly Roll, you know, demo the hook, but then the hook just is what it is. The hook was originally written for In Hell. Like, I wrote it for In Hell. And Nate Son. So putting it together and understanding what it was and understanding we had a time and a place, you know, where people don't quite know what you're talking about. And they don't have a lot of time to hear music, so they read the words first. They don't, like, it's not like when I was younger. When I was 12, you heard a song first. Today, you see a song first. You may see the video. Mm. You may see the title of a song on a playlist. And looking for the right title, the original title was That Bitch. And studying different people, Extentacion, rest in peace, from out of Florida, Panic at the Disco, you know what I'm saying? And wanting a long song title. And then wanting people to know what the song is about. Like, this song, like, what's the pinnacle of this song? What's the proof of the idea? Kanye West is living proof and the living embodiment that you can't turn a hoe into a housewife. You know what I'm saying? And I don't want to sound disrespectful because, you know, Cuz got kids with the lady, but that's the reality of it. They're going to go to school one day and it's going to be people making fun of them because their mom is, you know, swallowing Ray J on a tape that they sold for money. And this is why the concept makes sense. You know what I mean? So I can live in a space that I know is factually true. I don't care what nobody else thinks. And so that's why I don't mind taking risks. I take risks because I'm well-researched. You know what I'm saying? It ain't really a risk at all at that point.
And that's the most important thing, because a lot of artists, you know, because we want to hit on 2 points, glasses, with what you just said. Because that is a very, very, very astute observation that is a testament to your academics of being well-read, well-researched, being studious, and most importantly, confident in that empirical knowledge, you know, how you know what you know. And that aspect of it, how important is it for young artists coming into the game to understand the business and not from the perspective of the women that they deal with? We read about that situation, you know, me and my brother King, we were talking about it, about that chick in Atlanta, you know, that she just found out she had HIV. You know, actually not even HIV, she's got full-blown AIDS. And
yeah,
she was linked to a lot of
TikTok.
These. Yeah. Yeah, that she was linked to a lot of these celebrity dudes. You know, and
A-listers.
We see, go ahead. What is it, King? Go ahead.
I said a bunch of A-list names at that.
Yeah. And when you, and not only that, glasses, but, you know, rappers, you know, but athletes as well. You know, young niggas getting money. How important is it for them to understand the implications? Because we're all older. You know, you and me. Are pretty much a year apart on age, and King's, you know, right below us. So we all came up in that era where you really, really had to understand the game, and we had to learn this organically. We damn sure didn't have social media expediting the process, which probably then was probably better for us, that we didn't have an artificial sense of intelligence. We really learned on the street through trial and error how to deal with certain women. From your estimation, what do brothers have to understand out there in terms of that type of business?
About, man, that's tough. You know, I mean, I think everybody who nailed her is probably panicking. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just tough. We're in a weird space to where people, they're trying to PC a life. How do I explain it?
Take your time. We got time. Take your time.
You can live a certain way in the regular realm of living in America. But then there are
right.
certain rules that change depending on which lifestyle you walk. So
right.
the PC idea works fine if you're in corporate America, if you're in middle America. But once you start playing in this urban culture that we call hip-hop or in the places that breed hip-hop, there are extra sets of rules to protect you the same way. And if
mm-hmm.
you aren't aware of them, you feel me, you can fall victim. And there's a possibility that, you know, somebody messing with you, feel me, and I saw her, she was 60-something pounds. Could have contacted HIV, you know. Thank God we're in a time where, you know, if they call HIV, you know, there's medicines now. You can live to be 100 still. But, I mean, again, these messages that matter in this lifestyle, in this world we walk, that we call, you know, urban America and hip-hop, you know what I'm saying? That's why these rules are invaluable. You got to watch where you putting your penis, bro. You got to be careful. You got to really,
you know,
watch who, how you trust people physically and intimately, too. That's a really
right.
important thing.
You know, when Karen Stephens, a.k.a. Superhead, when she wrote the book years ago, and I can't front, both of her books were great. You know, I mean, I'm an avid reader, Get It From My Mama. And she really broke down the game from a level that, and, you know, this is back in 2004, these books came, you know, 2004 when her first book came out, Diary of a Video Vixen. So at this time, y'all, we're not really, like, up until reading that book, we're not really hip to the game in terms of, like, what was really going on. We had an idea of the groupie love that these artists were getting, you know, but we didn't know how heavy it was, let alone one particular chick that was, like, smashing everybody. So when we read it, we were like, whoa, you know, and it's like, I don't know about y'all, but in general, and it's no shade to Superhead at all when I say it, I don't think I could have a chick that everybody, I want me a girl that's off the radar, don't nobody got, you know, don't nobody know about. I can't, I don't want to be in that circle where everybody done hit, and everybody, you know, I mean, what was it on DJ Quick,
Melody
for the V? He said, you know, you like, Snoop hit it and they hit it too. Oh, yeah, little bitch, I'm talking about you. I'm like, I don't know if I want to be in that conversation. Everybody, we're talking with another nigga about how we both smashed the same shit. That's just me.
And this PC culture, what's crazy is they want to force that upon you. They have
mm-hmm.
convinced men that, oh, man, you know, you can't judge no, shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? Shut. Sometimes it's not always cool. Like, life ain't fair. I mean, I can tell you that as a black man in America, and my ancestors can tell you life ain't fair. So you gotta react and understand life ain't fair from the start. So you have a culture of women, which that's what Kanye should have never married that bitch. You know, it collides with that culture of women that want you to accept whatever they want to do versus having a say in who represents you. Like, you can look at an Amber Rose, respect to the sister, but it's like you having slut walks trying to promote, like, some proud sense of, you know, promiscuity. You know what I mean? Where you just,
right.
Yeah, like, where you just, it's like, no, queen, like, that's not it. There's nothing in it for you, and there's nothing in it for nobody else, and I don't care what none of these crackers tell you, none of us gonna ever see you the right way. Even the dudes who think they can see you gonna run into who you is, and they gonna have a problem. It might not be nothing wrong with you, but your reputation will precede you, and it brings shame to men, and that's an important thing. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I tell them all the time, a loose woman is like having a broke man. None of, just like how y'all don't want a broke man, and y'all want y'all man to get up off your ass and go earn something, well, we want you to get off your ass and keep your legs closed. Sit on your ass and keep your legs closed. So you can understand it from your perspective, but you got to understand it from both perspectives.
Shout out to Stacey Danielle Glasses. We had her on a couple nights ago. Had a great build with her, you know, because Stacey is as real as they get. And she was talking about in terms of women, and this is coming from a woman, you know, she said this is probably one of the most toxic generations of women that we have had in terms of the metrics of which some, we're not going to say all, of course, on the show, we love women, and we're not women bashers, we're not chauvinists, misogynists, or anything of that nature. But we as men and black men who love black women and just women in general, we have to call women out in terms of when some of them get out of line with certain behaviors. And like you said, and like she said, a lot of women want to do what they want to do with no consequences. And if you say something about it, there's a difference between being liberated and free and living your best life and just being fucking irresponsible in terms of what you're doing. And irresponsible
is
never cool in any generation.
Body is pissed off that liberation.
This is going to sound super misogynistic, and I don't mind. Mm-hmm. I don't. One thing I've realized being in this business and reading, I have to leave space to be misunderstood. It's way too pushed for everybody to get it. That shit don't matter. Like, you got to be a good person. Stop trying to convince people you're a good person. The reality is this. You know what I'm saying? God damn it, I've lost my train of thought. That was a good one.
It's okay. It'll come back. It'll get back on track.
It's a good one, too.
It'll come back, but
see. That was one that could have changed the world. That was one that could have changed the world, so I know that was crazy. That was one that could have changed the world, that idea. We have created a cycle for women since the existence of women to be unaccountable. And that's just the reality, mm-hmm. right? They don't have to be accountable for their hair, because we have created a safe space to where it's okay for them to wear weeds. Whatever is up with their skin, or whatever they feel about their skin, or even just wanting to change their skin, we have created a space where that's acceptable. Because now if you say something about makeup, you know, people will come down on you. The way they're shaped, you know, now BBLs, you have to be acceptable of all of these things, because if you say something about it, so we're creating a room and a space for them to be even more unaccountable for certain things versus, you know, having to deal with their insecurities, you know, a little bit more responsibly. This is the weird space between our species and the difference. Women hurt mm-hmm. themselves with their own insecurities. Women hurt themselves. Men hurt other
people.
That
is true.
Women hurt themselves with their insecurities. Men hurt other people with their insecurities. The truth is, I'd rather be at war with the world and at peace with myself, you know what I'm saying, than be at peace with the world and at war with myself. And Nip said that. I forgot who he quoted it from, but that is a really important quote. And I feel like women, you know, because we're not fighting them to let them know that they are beautiful and great how they are, you know what I mean, and enforcing that concept, you know what I'm saying, that they're at war with themselves to the point, you know, with all due respect, they paint their face. And nobody cares that that's so normal. Like, they paint their face. Like, that is crazy. Like, they paint their face. Like, you get what I'm saying? Like, I get it. It's a space now where that's normal, and that's just nothing. That's something. That is something.
And it's wild because... Yeah. Go ahead.
Are using themselves like filters, they're covering how they truly look, they shape-shifting their bodies. It's a wild time.
It's crazy because, you know, as a man personally, I like my women natural. You know, I like big titties, I like big ass that is not enhanced, that is not altered. I'm one of those men that's going to tell a woman, embrace your natural beauty. You know, don't look at all the, you know, don't let, especially somebody who is not the culture, especially, just like with the music, and we'll get into that conversation later, don't let somebody who is not of the culture tell you how you should look according to their standards of acceptability and cosmetic beauty. But with social media, what we have now is a situation where it is a lot more a lot of women look at themselves as they can actually get out there more. They'll get into provocative poses, duck lips, everything, you know, the side stances, I mean, the booty out, everything. And it's like they feel like they'll sit in there, what we call the TT, thirst traps, and they'll take the attention that they get saying that men treat them like a piece of meat. But conversely speaking, you're putting yourself out there in a way of really you want the attention. Now, you may not, and then it turns into now you want the attention, then it goes into an added element. Who do you want the attention from? You know, is it sexual harassment if a nigga you don't want hits you? And then if he's into you if it's a guy that you do want? You know, there's a lot of parameters that are not clearly defined in terms of attractability, desirability, who you're trying to get, and then the results from those reactions, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. It makes perfect sense. But again, we are combating a culture of life that's teaching human beings to not be accountable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're to some degree, you can look at it like we're telling people to not settle. But at the
right.
same time, settling is an underrated thing. Settle has such a negative connotation in our culture. I mean, what settle really means, it's like settling has become like,
and
it doesn't always
right.
mean that. Sometimes, like you might meet the perfect guy if you're a woman. You may meet the perfect guy, and he may be great for you, but you don't like he's not as tall as this guy, or he's not as muscular, but he treats you incredible. And you're like, well, I settled. No, to settle means you're, like, that means to, like, resolve a dispute. The problem, the dispute is in your own mind of why the hell does it matter how tall a human being is, bro? Why the hell does it matter how buff somebody is? What the fuck are they lifting or what are they reaching for that will make that you value that person over somebody that treats you correctly? So, again, it's how we look at these words, settle, the word loyal. You know, loyal is a horrible word. Most people don't know that. Like, if you look at the genesis of it, it's like nobody should be loyal to you. That's a word specifically used for kings and queens to establish somebody's greater and they have somebody's undivided and all-out support no matter what. No, you should actually go out your way to treat people great so they want to support you. You know what I'm saying? So, again, there's so many horrible terms that we have, you know, redefined, and people can't deal with those definitions well. So they end up fighting themselves the whole time. Again, they end up at war. Most people today, social media, they just at war with themselves.
We're going to come back to that in a second, Glasses, because we got to touch on some of the stuff you just said, because Derek Jeter in his documentary, he said loyalty is, and I'm paraphrasing here, he said loyalty is dangerously close to stupidity because you have
sure.
a lot of people that are locked in on the wrong elements. It's like with a lot of women in relationships, and men can be the same way, you know, but when we talk about a lot of women, you know, when we were talking with Stacey a couple nights ago, and Stacey countered me respectfully, and I had to really, really dig her point of view, and I agree. When I said a lot of people out here have an idea of what they want, and the problem is they want to try to kind of want to try to absorb themselves and everything they can to get it. And which she countered, I think, you know, the problem is a lot of people don't know what they want, and they want to run around trying everything until they get an idea of it. And I couldn't disagree with that. You know, like you said, you got a lot of women out here that, you know, and how many times as reputable men we have had this conversation? Because she said a lot of stuff that us men have been saying, and it took her as a real woman to say that. But how many times have we sat as men and said, you know, a lot of women don't respect a good man because he's that born nigga that has great credit, goes to work, comes home, has, you know, takes care of his responsibilities. He ain't on the street doing crazy shit. And he actually is at peace you know, chilling. But for a lot of women, it's the element of that predictability, because women, a lot of times, women, we're just going to say it, women are mentally stimulated. So for some women, that aura of predictability is what is not attractive to them. And I could be wrong. They'll probably roast my ass in the comments when we put this on YouTube. It's okay. We're journalists. We dealt with worse. But it's also, I would tell women, you know, but why would you want a man to where you have this false equivalency of masculinity, because he gets out there as 10 felonies, 10 kids by 5 women, you know, a negative 190 credit score, might beat on you or steal from you, and yet and still that's bae. I'm like, where is the disconnect in all of this? I'm like, you know, but then again, but the thing is, and then you say, well, he's a thug, he can protect me. But I'm like, then again, he starts acting up on you, and then you want protection from the man who you think that can protect you from everybody else.
Yeah, it's crazy, bro. We're in that unaccountability culture where, you know, you could be or say anything. And that's where a lot of we're going through this
you
period
could be anything,
where...
You could be anything but a fact.
Say that again, Glass.
Could be anything but a fact, man. Could be anything but a fact. Whatever's a fact, don't be that. And if you're proud of a fact, that's out. You have to just, that's a fact, cool. But I have to accept what everybody else is telling me they want me to treat them as. And like I say, I'm who I am because that's who I am in the mirror. How you treat me really doesn't matter till you bring it to me. But I don't worry about what somebody got to say if they ain't talking to me. I'm in a world right now where everybody is trying to tell me this is how it has to go. Like, people have pronouns, and it's like, okay, well, I don't quite know what the fuck that really means, but I get it, but I think you're just being lazy. You want everybody, like, you can't force everybody to treat you any way. You could, like, it's a difference if somebody commits a crime, but, you know, again, when people want you to like them, they will force you. They're like, oh, you got to like this person. So we're just in a different space. You can be everything but a fact.
Exactly.
Well,
and I was also built off this, too, with you being a part of the New West and your music being a part of that gangster rap element that I feel is missing with a lot of today. It's also, do you feel that there's also attack on freedom of speech and freedom of expression with cancel culture being the way it is today?
Yeah, but that only works, and that's hugely being under attack. But that can only work on people that depend on the world to tell them. See, what has happened is brands has determined who's gotten wealthy right now. Brands are determining it. So if your brand is approvable, feel me? If who you are links up with another brand, if y'all brands match, they will empower you. They will pay you. You know, festivals. You know, it ain't really a ton of concerts. You know, it's a ton of festivals. Are you good with Live Nation? You feel me? If they mess with you, they'll put you in every venue they want, long as you don't get on their nerves or go against what they got going on. So that's how they can control if somebody like DaBaby, where it's like, I'm going to determine what you say, because guess what? You come through us to make all your economics. So I'm in that same space where the public has to choose me. I'm not worried if a brand chooses me. If a brand chooses me, this is what you're going to get. You know, I'm like IT. I'm like Snoop. You're going to get this Crippin'. It's not going to be a ton of brands, but if you hang on long enough, the brands will have to respect your mind, and motherfuckers can't back down. But everybody else is playing the game to try to get paid. That's selling out, and I just can't do it.
And that's true. And the thing is, when you're looking at branding a lot of times to me is, you know, artificially inseminating, trying to mature somebody's celebrity. Because to me and to us, the best celebrity is when it's organic, when you deal with people from a real base. What we've been blessed to do with this show, we didn't have any major cosigns. You know, when, you know, King started this, and he did this because he felt there was a voice which he had that was important, and it is. You know, all of us have come along for it, and we're blessed to do it. And we've earned our spot, you know, with this, you know, what we do, because we've organically grown the brand. We don't want to attach ourselves to somebody to where they may give us a quote-unquote push, but that push comes at a price that we end up selling out our souls and our integrity for their interest and not our best interest. You know, we stifle our growth for somebody's gain.
That's
right.
That's the key. You know what I'm saying? And what I realize is, can make you $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
You got Drake. You got different people who won't go against nothing the brand say. They'll make you wealthy. But whoever needed more than $1 million a year anyway? What human being that has a family needed more than $1 million a year? The reason you really selling out when you really look at it is you're trying to obtain something you don't really need. I mean, there's nothing you can't buy if you make $100,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
That's more than anything that any one human being with a family, he could be a family of 20, there's nothing you can't do with $100,000 a month. Feel me? So that pursuit of things in excess, you know what I'm saying? You're going to have to play ball because it's really evil in the thought of it anyway. It's something you don't need.
Do you think a lot of times, Glasses, when you look at a lot of these artists coming in now in terms of who are some of them getting these major deals, do you think that's their whole premise is about getting paid more than actually keeping their soul property, S-O-U-L property? And they're just concerned about how they can profit. Yeah.
I mean, I just think most of these people coming in never had morals in the first place. If you listen to most people, right, they feel like they make music to get out of the hood.
Right.
What are you running from? What are you running from? The hood wasn't bad to me. The concept of the hood being bad came when I lived somewhere else and I realized some of the ways we play, you feel me, some of the things that happen are a bit primitive. But really, what are you running away from? Like, I go sit on in my neighborhood right now, not a thought in the world, not a care in the world. I go live in my hood, not a thought in the world, not a care in my hood. I'm just as worried about somebody burglarizing my house where I live at now that ain't nobody hood than I am when I live in the hood. Same shit. Feel me? So again, what are you running from? Most people are doing this because they're running from something instead of really going back to deal with it. So if you're running from that poverty from those people, you should be trying to change their circumstances too. So most people doing everything they can to get away from their self. You know what I mean? Hey, oh, if I go here and if I make more money, feel me, what? What's going to happen? You're not going to what? If you had to fight somebody, that's okay. It's not the end of the world. You may have to fight somebody as an adult. What are you running from? I'm not running from nothing. I didn't make music to get out of the hood. I made music to start a business, you feel me, so I didn't sell Sherm anymore. So I didn't have to break the law with how I earn my livelihood anymore. That's it. I wasn't running from nowhere. I'm not running from my peoples. Period. Just not. So
I don't think
most of these people are running.
I don't think we've ever had anybody break that down like you just did, because that was fucking genius. I don't think we've ever heard that before that way. And like you said, like whether Naughty by Nature stay on Uptown Anthem, you can run, you can hide, but you can't go far. No matter where you go, there you are. And the thing is, if you know where you came from, and you know what you had to overcome to get to where you are, we know your pedigree. So we know you're well prepared for whatever may come if, you know, niggas want to get foolish and you can basically, you know, take it up a couple notches, you know, being like, okay, you're going to make that blue come out of me. You know, so it's something that, but it's also too, like you said, your turf is what you're born into, and that's what makes you the man that you are. That's what gives you the resolve. That's what gives you the intellect. That's what gives you the integrity. That is what gives you the drive because of how you were raised. And I think, if anything, more people need to acknowledge the elements that made them who they are in a positive way, as you said, rather than trying to run from it. Because ultimately, it's like an old, and this is for my real Ghostbusters nerds out here with episode The Man Who Never Reached Home, with Simon Quaid. Ultimately, at the end of the episode, you know, with that that carriage, he ended up having to face himself for who he was, and he had to face it head on, which he did. And then after he faced it, he was finally, his spirit was finally able to move on. When you look at how far you've come in the game in terms of the music, when you look at how the game has changed in the past few years, especially what we're looking at with a lot of artists who are now getting busted for pretty much not leaving the street life alone, you know, from when they really, ideally the music was to get them into a better position. As an entrepreneur, as a businessman, as an artist, as a man, how do you feel about that?
I had a conversation on No Jumper about a week ago about this same exact thing.
Okay.
Nothing is happening to people because they won't leave the streets alone. They're not even playing the streets at this point.
Got you.
You know what I mean? Most people aren't playing the streets. You know, people aren't rappers and then they get killed. What they're doing is they're keeping on an antagonistic role when they're much more of an open target. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Or they just own drugs. Like, we're not giving enough credit as a society to drugs. Like, a lot of these people, right now, we're in a weird time, right, where it was like this slightly when I was younger, but it's really like this now, where people are bragging about being on drugs.
That's true.
Like,
tell it.
When niggas was hustling when I was younger and they was doing cocaine, that was their secret. That wasn't the proud
right.
thing to do. You know what I mean? That was
right.
a little hidden thing. Today, you have, you know, clothing companies. And shout out to the homies that got the clothing company that say that's an awful whole lot of cost syrup. They're like bragging. They're finding the way they flaunt their wealth is like, look, I got $1,000 in this cup. It's dope. So you have a culture of people bragging about success through, you know, being, you know, chemically induced under a substance. So a lot of the decisions we see happening and things that people are doing, they're under the influence. And we're not really, as a society, being mindful of that. Like, when they raided Thug's house, they found a ton of Percocet. They found 40 bottles of Promet. You feel me? Like, that's the problem.
Right.
How could he really make
right.
a quality decision? How is it possible for that brother to make a quality decision? Feel me? They tried. They said it was another case where somebody was trying to sneak drugs in there to them, because at this point, I would imagine they're itching. Feel me?
Right.
This
right.
is a real problem in society that we understand at the highest levels, but we don't get treated at the urban level. You know what I mean? And culturally. Like, we would understand it if it was happening to a white rich man at a business. We would look, he's under the drugs, they'd be changing his crimes and looking at it. But with our situation, we're not looking at that. They're not looking at Thug correctly. They're not saying, you know what? This man has a really bad drug problem. If you look at him, you can tell he has a really bad drug problem. And he's making horrible decisions. Like, drugs affect people differently. Like,
that's
it could
true.
Be like somebody like somebody who's a happy drug addict and somebody who's an angry or a fierce drug addict. So I think we're in this weird space where, one, you have people trying to prove to other people how gangster they are as far as their brand and business goes. So they're being antagonistic to people that feel poor, right? Or two, people on dope. And that dope is strong.
It is.
You got to remember, even as a gang member, I used to watch my homies do PCP to go out and do crime. Like, so even the gang members are
doing
exactly. So they wouldn't feel it later. And then they do PCP
right,
to not remember.
Right.
And next thing you know, you have a person that's gone, feel me, making decisions, and you think that person tough, and I realize that person is just high. That's it. So, I don't think we're really paying attention to the problem, and it's really crazy when you think about it because it's over-the-counter medication. They're not doing regular drugs that came from the earth. They're doing promethazines and Percocets and real medicine from Big Pharma. And somehow this is not being connected, but it was crazy because when it was crack, it was being connected to every last crack dealer. It was being connected to Freeway Rick, Waterhead Bowl. It was being connected to Noriega. It was being connected to, they went and killed Pablo Escobar, yet Big Pharma is pumping out all of this stuff that's making it to the street at unbelievable volumes. It ain't like it's coming out of pharmacy. It's coming straight from this factory. It's obvious because the volume is coming. You feel me? Fentanyl is a made product by a company. And yet we don't look at those people like Noriega. We don't look at those people like Pablo Escobar or Boston George or Freeway Rick. It's still a Freeway Rick, except that person now is a white person in a suit and a tie at a business. And that's what's going on with our culture and our brothers, and we're not really being mindful of it. The same way we got through trauma initially, through substance abuse, you feel me? We're still doing it right now. Except now everybody's like, oh, well, you know, I guess because it's coming from Big Pharma. There's nobody of color getting wealthy no more. So now it's white people getting wealthy, so that don't exist.
And it's different rules to it, glasses, when you're dealing with black people, because the black people were criminals, you know, it's like you said, as opposed, there's not no rehab, there's no treatment for us. But when it's white people, and we're not trying to say this from a racist slant, we're saying this from how we're looked at and how the racial divide of it, you know. But with white, you know, but the thing is, when white people started seeing the crystal meth thing pop, the Valium, those painkillers, all of that. And then when a lot of white people started, you know, kicking the bucket behind that, you know, that's when they realized, oh, my God, we have a drug problem. I'm like, well, we kind of been had one, you know.
Exactly.
You know, when it was people of color, you know, y'all really didn't pay much attention. I mean, you go back to the 80s with the Just Say No, you know, and even with the 70s with the Rockefeller drug law. Started with Nixon, you know, which Reagan, you know, continued. You know, so this is something that has been going on, but once it started affecting other people outside of people of color, then, oh, my God, we're in a drug crisis. We have to do something.
Man, it's tough. Every day it gets tougher and tougher. So I don't know. It makes me feel like I'm crazy at times. Like, am I the only person that could see this?
What do you think it changed? What do you think it changed, Lope? Because it was something that, you know, back in the day, like you said, you know, back, you know, and even when it started, when we started becoming the thing, you know, in songs, that was really the only thing that everybody was talking about. As an artist, when did you, as an artist, begin to kind of see the shift where, and the thing is with Lean in terms of Scissor, that's been going on in the South. Everybody gets on that like that's new, and that's been going on in the South since the early 80s. You know, it just didn't get up, you know, until, you know, shout out to my man Rob, you know, from Houston, my barber, gave me a whole bunch of game, man. You know, that dude is like a gem in terms of all types of genius and wisdom. I've known him over 20 years. But he, you know, he's from Texas, born and bred. And we were talking about that. When is the artist when you start seeing the change in terms of when drug culture outside of weed, which has never killed anybody, mind y'all. Yes, we'll say it on off the cuff. When did you start seeing it to change?
I just think we're in a recycle period. I think things are just happening over and over again. I was looking at an interview on Kev Mack's YouTube channel. Shout out to Kev Mack, one of the most important documentaries of culture, period, in the history of America.
Emmett Kenya Ware, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, and Alex Alonzo from Street Gang TV. But they do such a great job, and they were talking to Cookie's ex-wife. And Cookie's ex-wife was telling stories about how her, you know, Raymond, Cookie, and different gang members were doing Red Devils in middle school. And then you wonder why they launched that culture of what we call Crippin' and Bloodin'. What's going on? Red Devils were medication that you buy out the pharmacy.
Right.
When Tookie's murder case, when he went to jail for those murders, you know, whether he did them or not, because it's always a speculation about he didn't, they were on Shurn. You know what I'm saying? So, again, where did this culture come in of using drugs as a way to brag about your success? I mean, again, we still, poor people are doing the same thing. They're trying to convince everybody they're not poor, so people don't see them as poor. So they're doing everything in their power or the easiest things to show success or the simplest things. All right, look how much money is in my cup. Women are using BBLs not as a beauty standard, but as a sign of saying, I can afford to change how I look and look better. You know what I mean? They will tell you about how much they spend, or they feel like it's a sign of success, or they feel like somebody should fly into a different state as if they think that's what being wealthy is about, is traveling. And they have no idea what being wealthy is about, because every concept of it has been falsely told by other people that look like them, you know what I'm saying, about what's going on. When the wealthy people I particularly know, you feel me, that's not what their life is about.
And you know, Glass, this is crazy because all.
Hey, hold on. Hey, T-Max, hold on 1 sec. I think we got Pat on the air right quick.
Pat. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I don't want. I want to let Glasses keep going, man. Let them keep going. I don't mean to fuck up the flow or nothing, man. I will jump in here in a little bit, man. But, man, let them keep flowing, man. He was talking about some real shit there. I'll jump
what
in
up,
for
Pat?
Sure, though.
I got some
tips for Glasses myself. Glasses, good people, man. But go ahead, man. I don't want to interrupt the interview, man. I'll lay back. I'll jump in when necessary. But he's saying some real shit there, man. I think T-Max had a question for him.
Yeah, I mean, but again, you look at the situation. Like I said, Pat, it's great to hear you with us. You look at the situation with Miles Bridges, you know, from the Hornets, you know, in that situation where, you know, he's an NBA player, got his money, then got in that situation where he beat up his wife, and then also, too, before that, he was showing pictures of him having lean in a cup. And it's like, dude, you're an NBA player. You don't have to prove anything. And, you know, now the situation, you know, because he was up for his contract extension and now he's a free agent. And you're wondering if any team is going to pick him up now because the Hornets didn't pick up on his option, you know, to re-sign him. But it's like, I'm like, it's don't fumble the bag. That's all we say. Don't fumble the bag. You know, and
truth.
He fumbled the bag. He physically accosted his wife, and then he foolishly shows the lean on social media. I'm like, dude, you do realize that the NBA, which is your ultimate employer, does have a drug policy. You do realize that, don't you? It's wild, man. But yeah, there's this sense of authenticity, like you said, Glasses, that everybody's trying to play to that ultimately is going to have a – they think they're flying high, but at the end – it's a crash landing. And I just wish more people would understand that the habits that they think are beneficial are harming them. Run with it like Barry and dodge and dip on them. Go with it.
Yeah. Ah, man. Not much you can really say about it. You know what I mean? It's a different time. And again, everybody is trying to find shortcuts. Life, the killer of quality is convenience.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? The killer of quality is convenience. So you watch people, everybody want to be treated rich, so the quality of their wealth probably is not going to be as great, because they're taking shortcuts for the look of it or what they believe they'll earn if people see them as that. I mean, it started, I remember simple concepts like I've heard fake it till you make it. It's like, bro, how about just making it?
And there's no shortcut to success. It's a marathon, not a sprint. That's why you have to be conditioned for the race in terms of doing the training, in terms of teaching and learning before you can actually get to that finish line. You can't cheat the process, because the process along the way are the experience that give you the wisdom to make the right decisions as you go along. There's going to be mistakes in the methodology because it's not perfect in terms of where you place, but you can place yourself in a perfect position if you take the time to do what you have to do playing your position.
Absolutely.
I mean, Pat, you want to jump in? Go right ahead, man.
Pat, he goes out for a bit. He'll be right back. But
okay.
But I want to ask all. I want to ask Glasses this too, man. That I read something too that Dr. Dre was your main reason why you wanted to start rapping in the first place.
Not in the first place. He's the reason I took it from like professionally serious. He told me he thought I should be doing this for a living.
And when you heard that from him, what was that like to give you that motivation, that confidence that you could make this a career?
I just believed him. It means a lot more today than it ever meant before.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Knowing who Dr. Dre is now and all of the talent. At that time, I was just kind of a street guy that I listened to music, but I didn't understand, like, all music was the same to me. Like, Scarface was as successful as Snoop Dogg to me at that point. Like, if I liked your music, I liked your music. That was it. I didn't care how many records you sold. Ice Cube, Snoop, you know, Scarface, all of the same to me at that time. Dr. Dre, Eric Sermon, DJ Quick, all of the same to me. When you're a fan or not even such a fanatic, but if you just listen to music and live your life, you don't necessarily see who ranks higher or lower or what they're saying. I just realized he said that to me. And as somebody who's been, I realize, has success as a record company person, it made sense to me. And I was like, okay, for sure, I can do this. But over the time, having a longer relationship with Dre and, you know, talking to him different times throughout my career and being able to establish contact and learning what he's done and what he was able to accomplish and how much talent he's heard, it obviously means a lot more now than it ever did. And I feel like I feel indebted to make it happen at this point.
When you saw Dre and them, because we were bugged out when we heard last year, you know, about that Dre, Snoop, and them were going to do the Super Bowl halftime show. Because, you know, they're always going to, like, do it at least like a couple months. They're going to announce it before the actual game. What was it like to just see California, to just see an icon of Dre, Snoop, 50, Mary J, M, Kendrick, all them together, really, really, really? To me, that had to be just one of the most lit halftime shows ever. What did you feel as a fan of the culture, as an artist, just for being a native California? How big was that for y'all?
You know what's funny?
Mm-hmm.
I can understand how Kendrick would be at the Super Bowl. I actually understand how Dr. Dre or Mary J. Blige can be at the Super Bowl. But to watch
mm-hmm.
Snoop Dogg wear that blue bandana sweatsuit and crib walk and chunk up big chunky scenes and smoke his blunt on the side, and that was like, you know what's funny? A lot of people feel like what I've achieved in this music business is not as much as the next person. Let's say Kendrick, for example. Well, me and Kendrick started from a separate place. Kendrick started
mm-hmm.
out of high school. He was a rapper the whole time. Man, I started
K-Dot.
From hell. You know what I mean? I started from hell.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't interested in no rappers, being no rapper, none of that. I started in hell. I started straight from out of a PCP spot where we sell PCP. I started lower below the ground. I never started at ground level. I didn't start in high school. I didn't start as no middle school. I started in hell. I was in hell already. And I was able to pull myself out. Thank God for DJ Head. Thank God for Pooh. Thank God for my brother, BK. Thank God for my family. Thank God for the people, Boo for believing me, Pluck for believing me, Tone for believing me. I pulled myself from real hell, like hell. You know what I mean? And where I'm at now. So in my mind, I know I've accomplished so much, it's scary. You know what I mean? So, I can't really express how crazy it is, you know what I'm saying, and just what I've been through. And not to just go off on that tangent, but it's all connected.
Right. And to see that when you look at how hip-hop, you know, started in the going back years and years, you know, and to see where it is now, to see what was considered, you know, taboo. I mean, smoking weed, you know, I mean, like you said, Uncle Snoop doing the Crip Walk, chucking up, you know, the seeds, throwing it up for the All Blue crew. It was like, this is a part of America, you know, and it's something that is ultimately, it's just like with the Bloods and Crips documentary, Made in America. This is part of it. This is what goes on. And yes, you know, there are people. Not everybody that comes from it is a criminal. You know, not everybody from it is, you know, shiftless and violent. A lot of, you know, you always maintain the ties because that's where you come from. But it shows that, like anything, you may have had a rough beginning, but you've made it a point to make it a right end. And I think that was just a culmination. I think that's why that halftime show was just so dope, man. It really brought everything full circle about Black culture, Black music, a city, a state where you all from, all the way from San Diego to the Bay, you all have contributed so much to the culture in such an abundant fashion. You know, hip-hop really doesn't go any further without you all bringing that extension to it in such an excellent way.
You know
you're
what's
part
funny?
Of that.
What's funny is
go ahead.
What's funny is, and not to cut you off.
No,
like
go ahead.
When I was going through this whole sabbatical for like 7 years, I mean it's 10 years now since I truly fell in love with hip hop. You know what I mean? What it was, and to learn, like, you know, it is street urban culture at its earliest level. If you listen to the message, it's street urban culture. It's all it
right,
is. How you
right.
party? So it could be hip, hop, prohibited, and talk about how your friend moms can't cook in the ghetto. It starts street urban culture. So it's a message where you're talking about the poverty and the crime. And it was always the observer for the first 4 or 5 years. It was all observer. Like, I see what's going on. You know what I mean? But I'm doing my thing. And we all, I like to always look at Ice-T, you know, inspired by Schoolie D, as being the first person successful at talking about being a participant in that crime. And I always say that if you don't think Flash and them was committing crimes or like my man Crazy Legs, you know, one of the illest dancers ever in the history of hip-hop, told me they were stick-up kids. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we were all the same person, but we gave certain aspects and certain perspectives of the same life depending on where that seed of hip-hop was planted. And like I said, the West Coast gave the like, just like in its inception, New York, which created the culture itself, gave hip hop a voice as an observer of the life. And the West Coast came and gave it the perspective of the actual participant, even though we were all participants.
And the thing is, when you talk about Ice-T, shameless plug, because if you have not read the latest book that him and Spike did with Douglas Century, you need to pick it up. Because Ice-T is not necessarily, well, you could say in terms of the book itself, it's a semi-life story of both of them and the decisions that they made that ultimately, you know, led them to their paths in terms of where they ended up in life. But like you said, for Ice to really, you know, speak of it from, because Ice was a real dude, you know, in the streets. Everybody in LA will tell you that. We have never heard any story of over 40 years of Ice-T and Bitch and Punk being in the same sentence. We have never heard that. And there's a reason. You know, he's as solid as they come. Shout out to him, Al Patron, Body Count, Ernie C, Spike, the whole, everybody from, you know, 47s to Thigh Deuce to 60s, everybody out there, man. You know, because they all, the 20s, because they all knew, they all intermingled with those guys. So it's street culture to where it gives that level of an experience that the average person is not going to understand. But you listen to the music and you are able to get an idea of what it is. This is the type of America that sometimes they want to keep us muted on. But the reality is, it's there. You
and that's know, why, and I was saying it earlier, hip-hop gave you a window to see into the upside down, a world that people don't think exists. That, you know, again, I always say, you know, Colors is a police movie. It's not a Crip and Blood movie. It's a police movie. Boys in the Hood is a father movie, a movie about black fathers. You know what I mean? Told from the perspective of a son with a father, the difference in what it's like to have a father and what it's not, and how y'all all end up. Like at the beginning of the movie, Lawrence Fishburne said, "Watch how all your friends end up." Chris ended up in a wheelchair. Doughboy ended up killed. Ricky ended up dead. He's alive. It's a father movie. But there was never a voice. That's the closest you ever got to gangbanging until Snoop Dogg came and gave Doughboy and Rocket a voice. Same thing for Jay-Z. Jay-Z gave Nino Brown a voice. Remember New Jack City is a police movie.
You're missing one, though. Menace to Society.
Yeah, I'm saying
right.
He gave a voice to the Crips. Like Jay-Z gave a voice to the New York drug dealer. Remember, New Jack City is a police film.
Right.
You didn't really have an insight to understand Nino's plight and Nino's place in the world. You just saw the highlights that the police perspective wanted to give you. Jay-Z came and gave that person depth and character. So before that, you only had these small inklings into these places or these concepts or ideas that seem imaginary. But no, they were talking about our lives, but giving us the mainstream perspective. That's actually a big thing that made me write Tupac Must Die. The perspective of Tupac's death told from his perspective has always been mainstream. It's the average white person who don't even like black people like Tupac. So they all see it as just some guy that didn't like him and hated him, not understanding culturally he grew up in a way that you have to stand up for yourself. You can't let people get away with things because everybody else would do the same to you in the jungle. So that's exactly why I gave a voice to that person. That person wouldn't have had a voice if it's not for me. That's why I understand, like, what true hip-hop artists really went through. The first ones using slang or their music not being considered music because they didn't know how to play. You know, no different than James Brown playing the loop or, you know, or when they first heard Jay-Z and Snoop and protested their existence. That's why I knew it was real hip-hop, because it gave a voice to a person that culturally wouldn't have a voice, but represents a ton of people from where we from.
Definitely.
You're right.
Definitely, man. And also building off that, man, building off that Tupac Must Die joint that did like 0.4 million, that really got you out to a new level. If you look at the YouTube, the matrix of ages, like, when you put that song out there, did you expect it to really take off like it did, and you expect some of the backlash?
Man, I expected everything that I got. You know, I was able to study N.W.A. was Fuck the Police and their positioning. I mean, today that song is regarded as one of the most brilliant songs in hip-hop. It was frowned upon and pushed and suppressed. It almost cost them their life and their careers, places they were going. That song wasn't a popular song. That song didn't start making sense until the Rodney King beating. And then people could see what these brothers were talking about and what they were upset about. So I was well prepared for what I was going to go through. It was all good. You know what I mean? I knew at that point I was making real hip-hop, real gangster rap. You know, that facet of hip-hop and that gangster rap department, that crime-filled reality base of culture, you know, that we live in our community, I knew what I was doing. And no different than Jay-Z and P. people calling him a drug dealer on the news for 10 years, not even regarding his rap career. Or when Snoop came out and that church took all the CDs and laid them on the streets and rolled a steam press over them to protest his existence in America. Or him going to the UK and them trying to ban him. For me, that's what hip-hop really is. From its inception of the way we talk, the way we wore our clothes, the backwards cap was frowned upon. The lingo was frowned upon. The music was frowned upon. Hip-hop in its inception was frowned upon, except the people that would allow it to come into their space and bring joy and information into their life. So I knew it was what it was supposed to be. I knew once I never disrespected that man, I didn't have to call him out of his name. There's never a time in that song he's regarded as a bitch, a punk. Nothing more than the legendary superstar and important black man that he is. The whole song regards him as that. Feel me? But I knew people would be mad because it would force them to see the street's perspective of what's going on in life. No different than Jay-Z, Snoop, or any other great hip-hop artist coming out.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about it, hip-hop always got a bad rap on, y'all. It was always looked as being the cause of the violence when it was really an effect from the violence that was going on, which people articulated through the words, you know.
Yeah.
It's not something that causes anything. It's about the ills of racism, discrimination, poverty, lack of education, lack of resources that ultimately can not only affect black people and brown people, but white people as well. If you are uneducated in America, if you have not had access to anything, no matter who you are, you could possibly turn to a criminal lifestyle. It's not an absolute, but it's a strong possibility, no matter where you're from.
Tell me a poor place in this country where there isn't crime. There isn't an abundance
exactly.
of crime. Tell me where's a place
exactly.
where poor people exist peacefully, like they don't realize they're not going to be people of color. They're not going to be people that was forced into poverty. Show me a plantation that didn't have somebody trying to escape, doing whatever they got to do. Feel me?
Mm.
Again, these concepts are nothing new. You know what I'm saying? We just want to frown. I get so upset when people hear drill music and think it's about killing. They don't hear that it's about surviving. These kids think they're at war.
Mm.
People they genuinely feel and are probably accurate that want to take their life, that want to extinguish their existence. And you hear them get on records talking about, I did what I had to do to survive. No matter how much they can't articulate it, I hear it when I hear them rapping about it. They're not fucking John Wayne Gacy. They're not just killing somebody because it's Tuesday. They're not just serial killers. No, there are people at war. Community, because there's limited resources, limited opportunity. Reputation is overvalued. That's all you have. It's your sole possession. Resources are limited. Possessions are limited. So everything is primitive. So when people hear, the thing is, when you're from the culture, it's one thing. The outsider hears violence. Oh, he's killing people. I hear, damn, this nigga's at war with all these people trying to survive. Like, you do what you have to do to survive. If it means you have to take somebody else's life for you to survive, that's a normal reaction. That's a normal function, to take somebody else's life if you're trying to survive, if you feel this person is going to try to take your life. So, again, people hear it as killing and shooting. I hear it as survivor, surviving, them bragging about surviving. If somebody is walking around here making rap songs about killing four-year-old kids and that's all they songs, they will not be a popular artist. We not fucking with that. We're not even fucking with you disrespecting your mother.
Right, right.
The gangster is the coldest black man in America that makes the gangster rapping songs or anybody else. The black, you can't even call your mama out her name. We're not messing with that. You punch your mama, your career will be over. We are a culture of respect, but we also understand and we can make sense out of what people think is senseless violence. I just hate when we get in front of these white folks, we act like we can't.
But everything you said, and the thing is also, too, you have more of a credible ear with it because you really understand the streets. You're from it. So you know what really goes on out there when shit get popping. You know, and that's something where a lot of these It's wild, man, because we're seeing – the only thing that concerns me about a lot of the youngins out there is that we know the streets are violent and we know they go through stuff, but it's like a lot of times – and I want to choose my words carefully, but it's like a lot of them really, really don't understand in terms of certain things what's really – it's like what happened with Rolly Dan, and I still can't understand why he did this. You know, you're getting out on social media basically calling them out to come get you where you live. I'm like – and they went up and got him, and I'm like, dude, I'm like, if you know you
the
got
irony,
problems,
the irony go ahead, is please. That we believe – the irony is we believe that message is what got him killed. Man, a person could have been waiting out with his partner. He might have knocked down his partner girl. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
it's not
right.
always one plus one. It could have been somebody right there that was waiting on him. He got out the car to tweet that, and they seemed like, yeah, what's up with that you did with my boom, boom, boom? But we think it's affiliated
right,
with the message.
Right, they, right.
It don't have to be that deep. Man, you living in poverty and you know, you have issues with other human beings. You know what I'm saying? It's way more. It ain't always the rap lyrics convicting people or the words getting people killed. Just being you, where you from, and anything you did is enough for somebody to look at you as a threat and remove the threat. And extinguish
that's
the threat.
Real.
So I think it's simple for us to say all this message because we just connecting the two. But again, that's like
right.
for people to think that's something was like if a girl wears a dress that's too short, she like, I look good enough to rape. And somebody rape her. Oh, the rapist waiting in the wings. That's crazy. I don't know what the hell that got to do with that young man losing his life. You could pop whatever shit you want to pop. Somebody do something to you. I mean, it's a problem. But again, we're just in this weird space where somehow, man, it's just lost.
Pretty much in terms of if you could change anything about the music or the industry right now, what would be something that you would change in it?
Everybody that produced would have to DJ.
I like that. Please, dig deeper with it in terms of like the scratching, sampling, or just and just understanding how to, you know, just musically orchestrate from that level.
Well, the benefits in DJing just creates better records for a world that
mm-hmm.
lasts longer.
Mm.
You know what I mean? In multiple ways. There's so many different ways. Something as simple as sampling. Something as simple as understanding the groove of current climate, how people are moving. I think we will create more records that are enjoyable for the world versus records that are just like for niche amounts of people. You know what I'm saying? We have more records for everybody.
Yeah, yeah, and when I think about some of the rap, when I think about some of the producers like early Kanye, because, I mean, some of that stuff he did, and, I mean, on College Dropout.
It's incredible.
And on the mixtape, yes, absolutely. Look, incredible is an understatement for what early Kanye was. I mean, that dude was just, ooh, I mean, premier, I mean,
you know, I
got to
say this, though. I got to say this. I got to call him Old Testament Kanye, not the Kanye we know today.
I mean, I think Kanye is doing some really great artistic stuff. I think early on it was more like basic. And I think Kanye is doing the same thing. I just think he's not making it, you know, he's not worried about communicating with people through records.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but when you think about guys like Premier, rest in peace, MF Doom, who else? I mean, shit, man. I mean, it's like, I mean, we think about guys like Battle Cat, you know.
Dr. Dre, DJ Quick.
Yeah,
Quick
Dre.
T, Jermaine Dupri, Manny Fresh, all of them.
Yeah.
That's why hip-hop had much better records that everybody can enjoy on a landscape. But again, it's I think that's the thing I would change. I wouldn't worry about anything else as much as changing that. I'd make most producers DJ. Pretty much all producers in hip hop would have to DJ. I think it would fix a lot of problems we're having with records.
Yeah, and there's nothing like really having a knowledge of that technique on the ones and twos, making it do what it do.
Absolutely.
You know, you know, DJing is one of the fundamental elements of it. You know, it's one of the core elements of hip hop culture. When you look at how the music is, we're looking at how a lot of beats are produced. How much do you think sampling, in terms of the prices involved with it, has kind of contributed to some absences of it? Because some people have the money, they can afford those samples, and some don't.
I mean, I don't think none of that matters, because I think the legends who don't want to use samples, they're not making enough music to make a difference. And I think these youngsters who are sampling, they don't care what it costs. So I don't think it's really having an effect at all. I think the legends are worried about how much it costs or how much of the song they're going to get once it's over, so they don't want to sample. These kids just looking to make music that people can enjoy, or making music that they just feel, so they will sample no matter what.
Yeah, because they look at it from the aspect like, look, if it sounds right, if the streets is rocking with it, we just going to put it out there. We don't care even if the mix down is bad. They'll fix it later on when the track blow up. We just going to put it out there.
I agree. That's what makes Tooted and Booty so great.
Yeah. I remember when that joint first dropped, man. It's like you just got a bass line and just a hook on. I mean, that's YG, when he dropped that back in the day, I was like, man. But I tell you, the one song that really made me a YG fan, and I'd already known about Nipsey before that, but when I heard them on You Broke, I was like, this is just great.
You know what's funny, man? If you really listen to the production on Tooted and Booted, it was a game changer. Like, it's,
yeah.
People get mad when I say this, but that record, that production is top five most important productions in the history of the West Coast. And if you really listen to the production, minus, don't worry about YG or the chorus that Ty Dolla $ign sings, but just focus on the production, Ty Dolla $ign, chords, and Rest in Peace, Jocasso, how they did that. And that is a lot in that production. It seems like this simple bass line, but, you know, what they're sampling is insane for them to sample that and turn that into this festive song. You know what I'm saying? Like, that production is out of this world, and it'll never get its proper credit. But, again, you know, knowing the pace of people is everything. Knowing the pace and the groove of people is everything.
It's and that's something, when I first heard it, it's just like, you know, but that bass, if there's one thing for anybody really knows it, when they ask you what you think about, when they ask what you remember, I'm like, they're going to say that bass line, because it's just something, like you said, that the way that it's, the tuning on, the timbre of it, the tuning, just how everything comes together on it, it's definitely... It's one of those classic all-time party songs. You know, it's something that you can just, it's perfect for any climate. When YG first came on the scene with that, because it was still a couple of years before his debut album would come out, what was it like watching him come up, you know, from Compton and really kind of being one of the next wave of those guys? Game had already, you know, come through. You know, Kendrick, you know, had already, you know, come through, and then, you know, YG had already pretty much in 2010, because
YG came through before Kendrick.
Right, because Kendrick's
the
album dropped in 2011, 2012,
Push Pusha Inc. movement, which is YG's movement, Ty Dolla $ign, YG, different KF Third, really a lot of dope young brothers, kids. They had a party scene that was moving throughout the city, and they had finally made a song that was worthy of their scene. But their scene was already exploding. YG had records produced that were, like, really dope on the underground that was, like, already killing the party. KF Third had records. Joe Moses came home and got with them and had records that were destroying this party scene that
Shout
they were moving.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that hadn't made the club yet, but they were already having their own parties, and Mustard was DJing. You know, they already had their movement developing, and it was weird to watch it happen because it was a bunch of kids, but, man, there was so much power in it. And even now, I find myself connecting to that energy and to Death Row's original energy, you know what I mean, to do what we're doing going forward with the L.A. Giants.
Tell us about how that. Tell us about that coalition with LA Giants and how you all came together.
I've been knowing the Giants for 20 years, roughly, close to it.
Okay.
But we just wasn't making music. You know, they're Player Ham's kids, the Penthouse Players Clique. That's Player Ham's son.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
okay.
Yeah, and I met Joey. Joey was still in high school when I met him. I was already full-fledged drug dealer just starting to rap. And we connected right there. And over the years, we would see each other, but we really didn't, you know, socialize as much because we were always on different scenes. And around 2018, they had dropped a video, and I thought the video was dope, and I reached out to him. And I was talking to – I've always had a relationship with Joey Westside, but I never had a relationship with Deuce Mac. And I started talking to Deuce Mac, and we realized we have entirely everything in common. And I was working on Tupac Must Die, this idea called Tupac Must Die, and I was asking did he want to be a part of it. And he thought it was crazy, but he thought it was brilliant, so he was in. So Deuce Mac is in the video. He's playing a character in the back seat. So we shot the video, and I think they tripped that I knew exactly what was going to happen, and I told them how it was going to happen. And I think they looked at me like, oh, okay. And I offered to help them market their own label, get their own label and help them market it. And they was down. And we just set things into fruition. We started putting pieces together, getting everything together. It took some time. But, you know, now we're starting to drop stuff and get it to going and, you know, getting it going and setting everything in place. And things are starting to happen again. And it's happening the way I told them it would.
That's dope, man. I mean, and ultimately, who else are you going to probably down the line try to reach out to in terms of working with, in terms of what you all have planned coming next?
It's a female group. It's a female group called Foursome that I'm working with. They're sisters. It's
okay.
Really incredible. And we got this movement called 110. I haven't really talked about it, but it's a really special thing that's going to happen real fast, and it's going to be super important in hip-hop and really give people a look at L.A. in a way they've never seen it.
We're here for it. When we have you on again, we gotta have you back on when you got it at full motion because we got to hear what's coming with it. And you know, you and Ivory from Watt, too, we got to hear that collab, too, whenever y'all get that together.
It's coming like crazy.
So you talk. So you speak on Death Row with so much reverence. With Uncle Snoop being the head of it now, owning it, how big was that for the West Coast? Because we know you had already had word on the street before we all did about what was moving. And when it finally was confirmed, when you all heard what was going on the block with it, like he was going to get it completely, what was the feeling among the hood with that?
I mean, mine is how important it was to the West Coast. It was important for him.
Mm-hmm.
That was really important. Like, he put in some real work. People don't realize Snoop is finally getting his just due right now.
Right.
You know, he always got credit, but he's just
Absolutely.
Getting his just due as what he was as an innovator in hip-hop. Hip-hop was – Snoop Dogg took hip-hop so far when people didn't think it could go that far. And nobody else has took it further since. You know, you've only took it as far as he took it. It's the only place he can go. Maybe Eminem is the closest person, and where Eminem is starting from is totally different as a hip-hop artist than where Snoop Dogg is starting from. So if you truly measure, Snoop took it so crazy, you know, it's impossible. Like, so he doesn't really ever get his credit as a cultural phenomenon. He is. Death Row doesn't get the credit, you know, along with Bad Boy, as the true renaissance in art, the greatest renaissance in all the arts as it was. You feel me? So to watch him finally get all of those things and they come together is dope. Like, I'm really happy for him. I can't do nothing but smile.
Man.
Yeah, you had to pretty, that's one of those situations where you had to live through it to experience. Like, people don't understand how iconic he truly was, especially when he came out with Doggy Style and the anticipation for that and how people rushed to the stores to grab that record and to see how it blew up the way it did. They were saying it was like probably the biggest selling album in history. Like, yeah, to live through it, to understand it. Yeah, yeah.
When we first heard him on Deep Cover back in 1992, I mean, we just seen this tall kid from Long Beach who murdered that verse, you know, and mind you, this is Dr. Dre's, technically, his first solo song. You know, this is You Have to Leave Him Ruthless. So, you know, this is before social media. We're reading Source Magazine and Word Up and all that beforehand, so we get the word. And then, of course, MTV and BET. So we're getting this word that Dr. Dre is dropping a solo song. We're like, from this movie called Deep Cover, so we're like, oh, shit. Because the real title is called 187, but obviously they couldn't do that for commercial purposes, so they called it Deep Cover. But when we heard it, nigga, it was like some shit we had never heard before. And then we heard G-Thang in the fall, and we heard Snoop doing it again, and we were like, oh, God, this album is going to be monumental. We knew it was going to be special. We did not know this was going to be the cultural shift that would – hip-hop would never be the same after the Chronic dropped. And then they won up to the next year when Doggy Style dropped, and it changed the game again. I mean, how many times as an artist can you say you are involved in a project 2 years in a row that literally becomes a blueprint of how other artists come after you? Snoop and Dre are just magic together, and I'm hoping to God that we get another project with them. We really
need
it.
And they're working on some stuff right now.
We need it. We're here for it. We need it. This is one project Dre needs to drop. He didn't give us Detox. We're still hoping on that, but damn it, we need this. Dre, whatever you
man,
and
you
got
know
coming,
what?
We need it now.
They'll figure it out, man. That's what they do. When them boys together, they'll figure it out. Doc is with them. They will figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you look at Dre in terms of how he's become a billionaire, I mean, billionaire status, I mean, this is a guy who is taking it from the streets of Compton, you know, in his mother's house, to becoming, you know, a worldwide, not only known producer, but a businessman as well, and a philanthropist, you know, donating money, you know, to high school, colleges. Yes. The Defiant Ones, that document, shout out to HBO for the documentary they did a few years back. They really told his life story, him and Jimmy Iovine. What is it like to just see somebody of that iconic status who really, really, really you all have directly or indirectly come under that has just totally, if you had to put a Rushmore of California in reference to influence, musical influence, style,
craftsmanship.
And you've had craftsmanship. You can pick five. Fuck four. We'll give you five. Who would be your five?
Repeat the question. If out of what and what?
The Mount Rushmore in terms of the West, in terms of style, culture, like Kingston, you know, just everything, contributions, who really, really make the West what it is.
Ah, man. Okay, we're going to start
with... That's why we gave you five.
Say why the West is what it is. I think you got to start style and culture. I think you got to start with Eazy-E, number one.
Absolutely. Shout out Kelly Park.
And I think Eric Wright is one of the most important figures as far as style, class, and how we see music on the West Coast as there ever could be. Number two is Snoop Dogg.
Shout out Long Beach.
I think the way Snoop Dogg started to carry himself in style and grace and what he started to provide to everybody was just completely different. Number three would probably be Ice Cube.
I take that back. Okay.
Number three is Too Short.
Too Short changed.
Because Too Short changed how we talked.
Mm-hmm.
Too Short changed how we talk. Number four is Ice Cube. Because Ice Cube changed how we talk. And number five, somebody that's responsible for style and culture, just a super cultural phenomenon. And I feel like, you know, I see everything he is on people. Is, you know what, it's a kid that passed away recently. And I see so many people that remind me, to me, that have his influence. A kid named Draco the Ruler, rest in peace. Draco would probably be the fifth most style and culture influenced guy from the West. I see so much of his shit on everybody. So I know there's a lot of legends that I didn't name, but I don't think they were nothing nearly as influential as that kid. That guy was some shit.
Draco really got a lot of love in his passing. What made Draco so special?
He just represented the next generation's interest.
Mm-hmm.
What they were interested in, you know, he became a voice of their interest. He became a sign of success, of success for their generation. He represented their hustle and flocking and burglarizing houses. He represented their interest in foreign cars, and he represented a lost generation's interest, and he became the mascot. The centerpiece.
That's deep. Coming in the game glasses, and you've learned this, how important is it for artists to organically reach their fan base in terms of really cultivating a following? Not through crazy ass antics, but through real music. When you look at the next generation, guys like G Perico, when you look at them tremendous twosome of fineness, Cam and China from Inglewood, you know, when you look at artists like Ivory as well, you know, when you look, you know, at that whole, you know, the next wave of the West, how important is it to build? And Steve Lacy, I got to shout out Steve Lacy from Compton because Steve is just an unbelievable talent. How important is that to build it from the ground up to really connect with your fans in a real way?
I mean, it's not the only way, but right now you have access to them, and that's important. It was hard to have access to people so simple, but now you can have access to them, so it makes sense for you to really take advantage of the, you know, the opportunity to build with just the direct consumer.
There's no – and one thing about it, I think you should always look at your core fan base because they're always going to be with you, and I think that's something artists always have to understand. If you can get out there – talk to the people, meet with the people, do that. You know, just chop it up with them. You know, give them a little bit of your time. You know, acknowledge them as to them being the motivation behind what you give them that inspires them. You know, we're all a fan of somebody, you know. And in the end, we all are able to inspire each other because we see what each other do as important. You inspire us doing what we do because we get to talk to people like yourself, you know, who we've been fans of for years and are happy to have on this platform, you know, just like someone may inspire you to continue your, you know, path to greatness and such. You know, you're still writing those chapters of championship, you know, pedigree. Watts is a city of winners, too. You know, I mean, there's nothing more to say other than you carry your city on your back and you do it with pride, you do it with integrity, you do it with grace, you do it with strength, you do it with respect, and most importantly, dignity and honor. And that's no small feat in terms of the distinction for what you do. We're about to close shop. Glasses, this has been phenomenal as always. And we really, really, really appreciate you so much coming back with us to share your wisdom, your insight, your intelligence, and, you know, your profound philosophy. We thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Much love, brother. It's all love and respect.
Absolutely.
Always, man. Always, man. And you know, we definitely going to be doing our part and pushing whatever projects or new joints you pushing. We know we just let you know that, you know, whenever you want to come by, we can do the part three down the line.
Absolutely. He still with us, or did he? Okay.
Yeah, I think he booted us off, man. So yeah, we about to roll up out of here.
Okay.
Big shout out to Pat for calling in as well, man. So we're gonna see y'all again. Another bat time, another bat channel. 5-11 on the books. Holla.
We out. God bless. One.